guest today is Ben Von Handorf. Ben, how are you?
Great. How are you doing, Dave?
I'm doing great. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
What do you do for a living?
I'm an Android developer mostly now. I had a long career as a .NET web dev, and now I've mostly transitioned over to doing Android for a living.
I used to know you really well when you were a .NET guy.
It's true. You
were good at it.
We worked together on several projects.
Let's talk. I'm interested really in that transition from .NET to Android. It's a different platform, a different operating system.
It's true.
Were you doing mobile development in .NET?
I was not. I'd done some in the past, but mostly in the distant past.
Okay, so you had to learn mobile development, and you had to learn a new platform and a new language.
It's true. It's true. Luckily, I knew C#, and Java's not that different. Mostly, to do Java with C#, you take out some of the nice things. If you think of C# around the 2003 time frame, Java has generics. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the nicer things that we got with version 3 and version 3.5 of the compiler of lambdas and things like that, they just don't exist.
Okay.
So you get used to giving up some of those things. But the power of the framework is there. It's a lot like a lot of platform switches, right? I know there's a string class, and I know it's got a method on it to slice it up. What's the method called? I've got to go do the research and find that out.
Is there IntelliSense in the IDE?
Yes. Mostly I've been using Eclipse, which is kind of the path of least resistance. But there are different IDEs. Yeah. In .NET, you use Visual Studio because otherwise you're crazy, right? But you can use Eclipse or you can make use of some others.
I use Edline myself.
Well, sure. Or, there are the people who say VI is the only way to go. But I'm not religious about that.
I might have made up part of that story. So you're developing in Eclipse. Are you developing on a Mac?
I am right now.
Okay. Is that necessary for Android development? You could do it on Windows as well.
Yeah, or Linux.
Or Linux, okay.
I'm seriously considering, we'll see, I may wind up going back to just a Linux box.
Okay.
You can do it on any of the major platforms. It's kind of nice to have it be Unix underneath. There are some times where you just want the Unix command line tools.
Okay. And Mac is Unix underneath, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. In reality, it's just a Unix box with a fancy candy coating over it.
Okay.
So it's nice.
All right. So what were the things? What sort of things did you have to relearn? So the language was you had to learn it, but it was familiar to you.
Yeah.
And IDE Eclipse IDE is kind of similar to Visual Studio. So that
is
that's what was radically different.
The biggest difference is, especially coming from a web background, kind of the life cycle of an application.
Okay.
Right. When does the app start up? How long does it live? When do things happen? Because you're on a phone, we're kind of used to living, or I was used to living inside browser tabs, right? And if a user wanted to do something else, they got another browser tab open, and you were kind of there, and really you didn't even know that another tab was open, right?
Mm.
Your UI just kind of lived on, and the server went to sleep or whatever, right? It just services requests. But because you're on a phone, by definition, you're never the most important thing going on, because if the phone rings, it's more important than anything you're doing.
Interesting, okay.
So, at any point in your life cycle, you can just be told by the application, hey, you're getting put away.
I need to be able to handle that gracefully.
Yeah. And understanding that and making sure you put everything away, and when the user comes back to you, if they do, which they may never do, and you've got to decide what happens then, but you come back to a state that's as close to where they were as makes sense. But, if they were in the middle of selecting a dropdown, well, you probably don't want the dropdown open still, right? Because they're going to look at that and go, well, what's this list of states for? I don't remember. But you want their address field filled out because it takes forever to type those in on a phone. That kind
of
thing.
So you have to decide what's a reasonable amount of state to bring them back to.
And the framework provides a lot of help there, but you definitely have to be thinking about it. It's something that's got to be on your mind.
Okay. What else? Are there graphical tools to use in Android development?
There are, and they've gotten a lot better. The IDE now has some kind of drag and drop form development.
Is that your choice to go drag and drop, or are you more?
No, I mostly edit the XML.
Okay.
In the same way, if I'm doing ASP.NET, just show me the markup and I'll type that up. But it is there, and it's actually gotten a lot better. So I will admit now that there are a couple times that laying things out relative to each other can be very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I'll just drop to the graphical tool and let it handle that and then check it and make sure it did the thing that I actually wanted it to do.
Okay.
Just to save a little typing more than anything else.
Yeah. So I now forgive me, because my Android development is limited to watching you code on screen at that. what was that thing called where they had the three platforms?
Oh yes, the
SmackDown.
The SmackDown.
Yeah. So
yes.
you were the Android guy, and they had a Windows Phone guy, and they had an iPhone guy.
I was.
And,
yeah. yes, and I was not explaining much during that. 15 minutes is not a lot of time to get anything done.
So what does an Android application look like? You mentioned there's XML and there's Java in it.
Yep. So it's primarily made up of screens, and in Android they refer to any screen is called an activity.
Okay.
And by definition, it takes up the whole screen. We'd think of it as a window if everything in Windows was full screen all the time. And any piece of user interface pretty much has an activity associated with it, but there are other parts as well. The normal way you lay out the activity, it's kind of model view controller, not 100%, but there's an activity class and then a separate layout file that you edit that actually describes the user interface.
Okay, so there's that separation of concern that we see in MVC.
It's a little bit. It doesn't kind of enforce the pattern that we'd like, as strong as we'd like, but the UI is separate from the activity itself. So you build up the user interface in XML, and it's just XML. It's it's a lot easier to type or use the graphical tool. And then the activity is all Java, making use of kind of the Android framework as a whole. An application can have other parts, which is actually one of the other things that kind of throws you off, is that we're used to, if I'm writing a web page and say I need to go hit a web service, right? I can use an async task or something like that to kind of clean up things on the web server in terms of threads not waiting. But at the end of the day, I just need to make a web request on the same thread that the request is running on, because I need the results of the web service to display the page.
Okay.
Right? On Android, you don't really want to have your UI driving that, for that reason I mentioned earlier of the UI can just go away. Well, if I'm trying to save your user record through a web service call and the UI goes away, what should happen? Should it finish? Should it not? Should it, what happens if the server responds with a 500, but there's no user UI?
And I know the answer to that. It depends.
It depends. It always depends. But there are some other pieces that Android brings to the table called services and content providers.
Those services that are actually making the calls, requests out to external services, to web services, for example.
Exactly. Generally, you have your activity calling into your own services that understand how to run off and make those requests and things.
Oh, okay. All right. Those are Java code or Java?
Yeah. Yeah.
What's the right word?
Yeah, components? Just Java classes.
Java classes, okay.
Yep.
Okay. So people are interested in developing for the Android.
Mm-hmm.
Let's walk us through the steps to get started. What do they need to do? They need a computer. You said it could be a Windows box, a Mac.
Any of the three big platforms, right?
It could be a Unix box, and they need Eclipse. Is that a commercial product?
It's free.
It's free, okay.
It's free. It's a big open source project. Eclipse
That's the IDE.
Yep. And then they need to go to developer.android.com, which is Google's main site, and they need to download the Android SDK, which can be a confusing experience. One of the things that people bring up about Android a lot is that it's fragmented, is the word people use. There have been a lot of versions of the operating system, and they have evolved over time, and because of the commercial model that Google has chosen, they don't all get upgraded, right?
There now, when you talk about different versions, you mean that every phone has a different version of the operating system, right?
Well, different manufacturers can customize their phones, certainly, but also just over time, and you hear the code words, which I will admit, as a longtime enterprise dev, it kind of hurts me to say Jelly Bean in a professional conversation, but, you know, there's been Eclair and Froyo and Gingerbread and Honeycomb and Ice Cream Sandwich.
Yeah, these
and
are
Jelly
operating
Bean.
Systems. These are variations
these
of
are
Android
versions.
Operating systems.
Right. So Jelly Bean is the most recent.
Okay.
And I'm not sure why they chose to name them after desserts. Don't ask me that. But so when you go to download the Android SDK, you decide which of those you want to target. So you can say, well, I only care about the newest devices. Download the Jelly Bean version of the Android SDK.
Okay.
Or you can say, well, I might care about older devices. Maybe the market for my app requires people who haven't bought a new phone in the past 3 years to be able to download it. So I want to target Froyo or maybe Gingerbread, somewhere around in there. It can be a little tricky to make that decision.
Once I've downloaded that, do I need to have separate branches of my code to handle these disparate operating systems, or how does that work?
There are techniques. Mostly you wind up using the factory pattern a lot. And what happens is you write your code for the newest operating system,
okay,
and then you write fallbacks. And so you'll create a class that handles something. I'm going to come up with a bad example of maybe you want to handle JSON parsing. You get some data back from a web service.
Okay.
Well, older versions had a slower JSON parser, so most people brought their own. Now, in the newer versions, the JSON parser that's built into the operating system has gotten a lot faster. And the preferred solution is to use the one that's built in.
Okay.
You might say, you might have create your own version of like an iJSON parser, an interface, and then use the factory pattern to say, give me the one that's appropriate for the operating system I'm running on.
Okay.
And then you get back your parser and use it. And so you're insulating yourself from that operating system change.
Okay. So the factory pattern is I basically have a class, and its job is to instantiate
mm-hmm.
another class, in this case, right. that parser.
Right.
Which one it does, it decides, it has logic decided, but right. they all conform to this interface.
Right.
Okay.
So you're just saying, I need the appropriate parser.
Okay.
Figure that out.
And you need that sort of abstraction because you don't know in advance how many different operating systems you're going to target or
right.
how many different parsers you're going to need because
yep.
one works better on one operating system than another.
Right. And
okay.
in reality, I've only had to do that kind of thing a handful of times. It's not like every piece of code you write, you're going to have three versions of it.
Okay.
But you will run into things that are like, I want to use this cool new technology, mm-hmm. but I've got to support these older devices. Well, what am I going to do in that case? Am I going to hide the button on my user interface? Am I going to, you know, wrap this up?
Hmm.
As with anything, it's as though, we even on the website, right? We write code that, what if an IE6 browser comes to this page? Now that's not so valid anymore, right? I think we've all gotten to the point where we can take a deep breath and kind of say, I'm not going to support IE6 anymore.
I've said that a long time ago.
Well, yes.
I understand in China there's a lot of IE6 browsers out there.
Exactly. So it's all a matter of, you know, your business case drives all that thing. Stuff,
right.
As with
who is your target audience?
Exactly.
Okay. So I just want to just wrap up the part, the idea of getting started.
Yes.
We need to take these things into consideration. We need to have a development environment. We need to download the framework and the operating systems from Google.
Yeah.
Then you're up and running, right? I mean, that's
yep.
you can start to file. Is it like visually a file new project? And
yep, exactly. And
going. Okay.
They've gotten to the point where now when you do a new project in Eclipse, there are a bunch of templates. And
okay.
you say, I want a new Android project. And depending on what other things you choose to install, you can say, I want a new Android project that understands master detail, right?
Hmm.
And then that'll bring some things along for you to make your life a little easier.
It'll provide
and say,
some basic pages to do that?
Exactly. So.
Okay, nice.
Yep.
All right, anything else?
I don't think so.
Ben, thanks a lot.
Thank you so much, David. Best part about CodeMash is that I get to see all my friends, and we do so much great technology. It's a wonderful experience. Everybody should come up and see David at CodeMash.